The work comes first. If you're not starting your day with your obsession, your passion, at the end of the day, you got to prioritize your work. You got to prioritize your family. You got to prioritize your faith. Do all those things to be one of very, very few in the world.
Welcome to Athlete Country Club, the podcast built for parents, athletes, and competitors chasing the next level. I'm your host, Marcus McMarion, former Division I quarterback, now founder of Athlete Country Club. I started this show because, like many of you, I had to learn the recruiting process the hard way, traveling up and down the state, spending thousands trying to figure out what actually works. Each week, we break it down through two powerful segments. First, Coach Talk. This is where we sit down with college coaches, director of player personnel, recruiters to uncover exactly what they look for when offering scholarships. No fluff, just the truth from people making the decisions. Second, Athlete CEO. Here we go beyond the field into habits, training, and mindset that build elite performance and long-term success. You'll hear from strength coaches, nutritionists, sports psychologists, and former athletes who've turned their grind into greatness in business, leadership, and life. Because being an athlete isn't just about playing the game, it's about mastering it and building your legacy beyond it. So whether you're a parent trying to navigate recruiting or an athlete ready to level up, you're in the right place. Welcome to Athlete Country Club, where we turn potential into performance and performance into purpose. What's good, everybody? Welcome to Athlete Country Club. I'm your host, Marcus McMarion. Today's guest is super special, not just because of what he's done, but because of what he represents. I mean, he's a 9-year NBA veteran, University of Washington legend, now serves as an assistant coach for the Huskies and helping shape the next generation of athletes. And fittingly, he's our first basketball guest ever on Athlete Country Club podcast. There's no one better to help us cross over from football into hoops, recruiting, and the mental side of competition. From this day, from his days leading Washington to the Sweet 16 to being part of that Memphis Grizzlies team that made the Western Conference Finals for the first time in franchise history, Quincy's story is about, I mean, just discipline, obsession, and finding meaning through the grind. Quincy, welcome to Athlete Country Club.
Oh man, thanks for having me, man. I'm not one of the Carr brothers, but hopefully I could do.
No, you're up there in the Fresno Legends, man. That's a top two, not two. You're up there, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah, no doubt. So yeah, take me back to the beginning. I mean, like, what was the moment, I mean, you knew basketball wasn't just something you were good at, but something that could change your life?
My story is crazy because I think from the time I was born, I had no choice. Like my dad and my uncle, they were NBA draft picks. My dad's just a Fresno legend, a lot more than me in the game of basketball. And so from the time I was born, I've always had a basketball in my hands, and I had big shoes to fill. And so I was just chasing my dad my entire career. I wanted to get everything that he had and exceed it. And I've been fortunate enough, been blessed enough to live out my dreams in this game. And it's all because, you know, I had big shoes to follow.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, you stayed all 4 years at Washington when a lot of players were leaving early. I mean, what did that extra time kind of teach you about maturity and readiness?
You know, again, having a good foundation at home helped me stay. You know, during my freshman year, I had some peaks where I was playing really well. I was scoring the ball well, and people were talking about being a draft pick. And I had some valleys where, you know, you start, you know, I might have to come off the bench the game, or not playing defense, not making shots, you know, physically not there. And so, you know, I feel like my 1 year turned into 4 years very quick, and it went by in a flash. Like it was 1 year, but some of those long days, you know, felt like I was there for 8 years. But, you know, just to have that discipline and have that home structure really helped me, you know, persevere. I think, you know, a lot of times I would call home or, you know, be thinking about transferring and stuff like that, even though you had to sit out a year when you transferred back then. You know, all those thoughts came up. But when I called home, you know, my parents, my godparents, my home structure, they would say, hey, what are you doing wrong to make it, you know, tough for those coaches to coach you, or make it so where you're not where you want to be, or you're not lottery picked yet? Like, you know, I would call home and like, all right, well, coach might have subbed you out and you didn't make shots, but you also weren't defending, you know, or you did make shots, man, you didn't get enough rebounds, or and all those little things that they were, you know, teaching me and encouraged the coaches to discipline me. They helped me stay in the NBA as long as I did.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting perspective you kind of bring up, because I remember me being at Oregon State, there was a 7-man race for the quarterback position. We didn't know who the quarterback was. It was ridiculous, right? So I was just talking with my buddy Luke Del Rio, who was on too, and he was talking about being a part of that. And it's interesting because everyone has someone that you know you could call, and they'll baby you and kind of say, oh, it's the coach's fault, it's their fault, they're not good, they're not treating you right. But then there's also someone that you could call that's going to give you that constructive criticism, like you kind of had in that home base of like, hey, well, why aren't you just so much better than the guy you're competing with that it's you have to go in? Then the coach looks dumb to not put you in, you know? So I think just for you, I mean, when you look back now as a coach, I mean, what would 2025 Quincy tell, I mean, 2006 freshman Quincy about the process of becoming a pro?
You know what? Through the experience that I went through, it's helped me become the coach I am today. And so when I have like my little cousins on our team here at the University of Washington, Wesley Yates. And so all those things I wanted to tell young Quincy, I get to tell him. So, hey, man, coach is tripping. Yeah, he might be tripping, but you're not doing X, Y, and Z right. And you need to work harder, or I'm not going to let you let up a little bit when you have some success. No, you got to get your butt in the gym even more and work even harder, because that's what's going to take to make it in the league. That's what it's going to take to be all conference. And so it's the little things, man. It's in the margins. It's how you approach every single day. And again, you know, not having someone to pacify you when you called home, I think that's the biggest thing. I think that's one of the biggest things, one of my biggest takeaways. And you know, I tell that to kids I recruit now, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I could be your best friend. I could tell you all the things that you want to hear, but you're going to respect me at the end of the day, when I tell you what's right. And I always tell people, like, I'd rather be right and you be mad at me than to be lying to you and getting you through it. And then at the end of the day, you're like, man, you lied to me. That's why I'm not having this level of success. But if I tell you the real from the beginning, you know, it's going to help you go further in life.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And you were a part of, I mean, that 2012, 2013 kind of Memphis Grizzlies team that made that Western Conference Finals for the first time in franchise history. And I mean, like, what was so special about that group? Like, what made the locker room click?
Man, we all from different walks of life and all loved the game and all loved to compete. So every day you knew what you were walking into in that locker room, whether it's Mike Conley, who was super professional every single day. He was regimented every single day and did the right things. And he wasn't confrontational. He wasn't going to argue, but we knew who he was. Tony Allen, a whole different side of this spectrum where, you know, he's going to come in on some different things. But we knew that he had some flaws, but his strengths of being the defender, the communicator, the dog that we needed to guard the other team's best players was just as important as, you know, Mike's role. And then from Zebo to Marc Gasol, those guys, you know, Mark's from Spain, you know, but he act like he was from the hood in Memphis because he was. Like, and so some days we'll win a game by 5 points and it wouldn't be the best team and Mark would be pissed. Like, why is he pissed? Because he had such a high level standard for us that he wanted us to achieve. And then Zebo, you know, one of the best teammates I've ever had in my life. One of the most caring people you'll ever have off the court, but ferocious on the court. And nobody messed with him because, you know, he was that guy. And so, you know, even to Rudy Gay, he's still one of my best friends to this day, one of the most talented players, you know, ever. We all came from different walks of life, all had our superpowers, but, you know, I think we all loved and accept what the other person brought. And we knew that we needed that person next to us to achieve what we did. And that run was special. That run was special because, you know, every single day we're competing, whether it's in the gym, we're doing practices. And we had a coach, Lionel Hollins, that kept us to a high standard of excellence every single day. So our shell drills and guys working out in the gym and everything, we were just really competing. And I think the beauty of that team was everyone was trying to get to their first deals or second deals. And we were all trying to get to, like, all right, might end up getting, you know, good max, you know, extension. Marc Gasol started getting his extension. Z-Bo started getting the credit that he deserved. Tony Allen was, you know, trying to get to his bag and prove that what he was outside the Celtics championship era, you know. And so it was beautiful. And we were all young. It was crazy because you go from NBA franchises. This is the part that they don't tell you is you go from young and mostly single guys on the team. And then, you know, guys start getting girlfriends. And then, you know, one guy gets a girlfriend, then everyone kind of gets a girlfriend. And then, you know, one guy gets engaged, and then the whole team starts getting engaged, and then guys start getting married, and then they start having kids, and then, you know, those teams break up. But, you know, to be a part of that where, you know, we all were young and single, and then everyone starts getting married and being who they are and having kids, and, you know, we have a bond and a friendship, a brotherhood for life because of what we did achieve and the moments that we had together on and off the court.
Yeah. And I think that's an underrated topic that's not talked about enough, as far as every team that I've played for that was highly successful, the practice environment was just something people wouldn't believe. Like, kind of talk about that. Like, what was practice like on the most successful teams you've been on?
Man, practice was like a game because, you know, you got guys that, you know, they're starting, they're trying to achieve greatness. And then you got guys that are coming off the bench, like myself, who lived in the gym, you know, and I'm trying to take Tony Allen's spot or take some minutes from him. Even if I take 5 minutes from him, I'm trying to get where Tayshaun Prince is. And, you know, so you got guys that are coming in, they're hungry for that next guy's to slip up just a little bit. Because if he slips up, that means that's more for you, that's more for your family, that's more for your career and your legacy. And so, you know, practice every single day. You know, guys are coming at you because they want what you have. And, you know, at the end of the day, you want team success. But at that level, everyone's still trying to prove themselves to some degree.
Yeah, no, and that was definitely, I mean, kind of like a grindhouse team. I mean, kind of that blue-collar, defense-minded, unselfish. I mean, like, what did that culture teach you about leadership, ego, and sacrifice?
Man, grit and grind. Ego, you know, you had to leave it at the door, no matter who you were, because, you know, even the starters, you know, whether Z-Bo, it might be Marc Gasol's turn this time. Hey, Mark might be blossoming into an all-star like he ended up being. Mike might be turning into, you know, a max guy like he was. And, you know, then you learn just the work ethic. Tony Allen, he brought his iPad everywhere, his laptop everywhere, and he was watching film religiously. And you got to see and pick and choose, like, all right, who am I going to follow in this locker room? Who am I going to try to be better than? And then just the competitiveness in a practice or in a game setting. So in practice, you're going against each other. Damn near might come to blows. And then the game setting, if you're not holding yourself to that standard and playing hard, hey, man, you take the night off. You tripping. All right, this guy wants to come in because he's hungry. And he's trying to do it for him, but he's also trying to do it for the team. And so you always have to look over your shoulders. Isaiah Thomas says it best. He's like, man, you got to stay paranoid, especially in that league, because guys are coming. Whether you see it or not, whether they're overseas or local, you know, guys are coming for what you have.
Yeah, that intensity level, I mean, that it's so real. I mean, kind of, I know in a past interview you mentioned you made it to the NBA by trying to mimic Kobe Bryant, and you said Kobe brought that kind of killer instinct out of you. I mean, like, what do you mean by that, and what did you learn from studying someone like that so closely?
Man, I had a screensaver. I don't know if you had you could probably find it, but it's like it was a Kobe Bryant, Kobe's face, and then it also had like the things that he did every day. So it was like sprint some more, 500 shots, go to nap, do like, and it was just like a ridiculous schedule of work in one day. And back then you didn't have social media, so I think, you know, I would ask people that were in the league or, you know, try to find out like what's Kobe doing. And so you didn't have social media where he's posting like, oh man, I just had my morning workout, or he's working out with this trainer or whatever. It was kind of mythical. And like you would see it on the Sprite commercial. You would see him lifting and doing all these things. And you're like, damn, Kobe's doing that every day. And so I built up such a work ethic that it was just crazy. You know, whether, you know, before practice, I'm working out for an hour and some hard. I would go into practice in college with a weight vest on and take it off halfway through, and my teammates were like, "Yo, you were just practicing the last hour with a weight vest on, like with 10 to 15 pounds on you, like, and you're still beating us in sprints and you're still killing us, and like, what is wrong with you?" And so I just built, you know, it probably wasn't the best for my body, but you know, I would go to the gym at all hours of the night. I would call my friend that was a GA and say, "Hey," he'd be at the club or at a frat party, you know, having a good time. "Hey, we gotta get up 200 shots, 500 shots, and then we could go maybe out for a second, and then we gotta come back to the gym," you know. And so I just, you know, until I got there, I built up, you know, such a crazy work ethic. And even when I got there, I back in that time, you know, your rookies weren't starting; they weren't coming in to minutes. And so I went to a veteran team, and I was backing up, you know, Peja Stojakovic and Trevor Ariza and guys like that, Jarrett Jack and Marcus Thornton, a lot of good players. And I'm playing with Chris Paul and David West, and we're a playoff team; we're really good. And you know, rookies didn't play. And so, you know, Paul George, Gordon Hayward, guys that were in my class, they were seeing the same thing I was seeing. They're averaging 3 to 4 points a game. They're playing sparingly, and you know, their teams are trying to win. And I would just live in the gym until like, and I would in practice. Me and Trevor Ariza shared a friend. And Trevor would be calling that friend like, "Hey man, I'm playing every day, all these minutes, and Q's coming at me hard as hell in practice the next day. Like, tell him to chill." And he's like, "You know Q's not gonna chill. Like, he's gonna go at your neck every single possession because he wants to make it so bad." And so, especially those first 5 years, I kept that same work ethic that I had from high school and college, which was insane. And I had teams try to kick me out of the gym. I had teams try to change the code to the access the practice facilities. I got fined for working out too much. I just pushed myself to the limit because of what I thought Kobe would do. And even when I got to the league, I would say like basically like, "When can I see him?" And so they're like, "Every day before the game, you know, 3 hours before the game, he's on the floor, he's working out." And so most guys get there, you know, 2 hours, hour and a half before, whatever, and they go through their routines. Kobe's there 3 hours before. So I'll get an Uber, I'll get a taxi, go to the arena before 3 hours before the game, and I'm working out just like how he did once I first got a glance of what he did. And you know, that's what I mean by, you know, I just try to follow what he did. And I never got to really see it besides him working out pregame, but my mind was like, he's doing this. And so, you know, it helped me get to a good spot in my career. And then, you know, I burnt my body out so much. I worked so hard that, you know, you start wearing out the cartilage, you start wearing out the things that you need to play for 15, 20 years, which I wish I didn't work as hard as I did, but it helped me get to where I was.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, and you've shared, I know, like on social media, on your Instagram, you have a pinned post of Kobe, and you've shared, I mean, what it's like to actually share the court with Kobe. And like, what do you remember most about those moments?
Man, anytime someone asked me about Kobe, I would just say he's easily the hardest player I've ever had to guard. Because you know, when you go into a scouting report, you're like, "All right, this guy does these things good. All right, we're gonna force him to his weaknesses in this." And I remember my rookie year, I asked Coach Vincent, was like, "All right, what am I going to force Kobe to do?" Mind you, I've watched hours and hours and hours of film on him, you know. And he was like, "All right, scouting report, he has no weakness. Don't make him mad." It's like, wait, what am I supposed to do? Like, he has no weaknesses. Don't make him mad is like, it's not even a weak. It's just like, just don't piss him off because it could get worse than what it's already going to be. So it's like, all right, you're not really helping me out too much. I asked the next coach the same thing. And so when a guy is that skilled, you know, and graceful and strong and just unbelievable basketball player, and you know, he was a normal sized guy. I'm saying normal, he was my exact frame, 6'6", 220, 225, like strong as hell, but he was cat-like quick. He knew every angle. He shot the ball from everywhere. His IQ was off the charts. His strength was off the charts. His will to win was off the charts. And so, you know, to actually go against it, you realize why he was one of one in the world, where, you know, you're going against somebody. All right, I could bait him into this. I could do this, or I could have my will with him. But like, my man had no weakness at all. And so, you know, I did my best to guard him as many times as I could, but, you know, he got the best of me a lot of times, and, you know, I got to stop him a few times in my career.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you think, I mean, Kobe, obviously just the relentless kind of work ethic that he always had kind of through his NBA career. I mean, do you think it was kind of that almost fear that he struck amongst the league? Like, when people were guarding him, everyone knew that they had to elevate their game just to get close to kind of the level he was playing at. I mean, you think it was it like something he said, or just the energy he carried that kind of stuck with everyone?
Man, that aura is something different. With Kobe, I think the first time I met him right before I got drafted, and I couldn't say a word. Like, my friends were there, and they're like, oh, he wants to meet you, and they go to introduce me, and, like, he's asking me these questions, and I'm just like, there was not one word coming out of my mouth, and I'm not that shy of a person, but it was just that aura of just, like, damn, that's really him. And then two, it was the night before playing some teams and some guys, you might be able to go to dinner with your family. You might be able to maybe go out. You might be able to, you know, hang out with your girl or whatever, and maybe not watch as much film or whatever it is, eat dessert. The night before you play Kobe, you better ice. You better watch every clip he's ever had. You better be on your P's and Q's, because that next day, you know you're in for a battle. He's not coming in, you know, to coast to some numbers. He's coming in to get 80, to get 60, to get 70, like to embarrass you. So I think that's what guys feared the most, was like, if I'm not with it, he's going to score 50, 60, 70, 80. We've seen that. So it's not like, oh, he's going to let you off the hook and like, oh, I got a guy that can't guard me, I'm going to pass to my teammates. Like, he's going to embarrass you. So it's either you got a choice. You get embarrassed or you come with it. And so, yeah, the night before playing him, I'm going to bed. I'm turning my phone off. I'm not worried about no tickets, none of that. Like, I'm locked in.
Oh, that's unreal, man. And, you know, obviously, I mean, Kobe, I mean, he's one of one. I mean, the GOAT. But, I mean, just like the work ethic across the league, I would imagine at the professional level, when you were there for nearly a decade, I mean, it's got to be unmatched. I know there's another clip where you talk about Steph Curry probably getting up 2,000 shots a day. Yeah. I mean, that's why it looks so easy when he plays. And can you kind of talk about like the volume of work that goes into mastering one skill like shooting, and how misunderstood that is by young players today?
Man, I'm someone that went from probably, you know, shooting wasn't my best attribute coming into the league, to being, you know, end up being one of the top 3-and-D guys in the league, and shot a great percentage for a certain point in time in the NBA. And the volume of shots and the technique and the discipline that comes with that is a lot. You know, whether, you know, you think you're going to come to the gym when practice starts, you've lost. You know, guys are there 2-3 hours before, they're getting up a few hundred shots. Practice goes on, they're shooting up a couple hundred shots after practice. And then they're going to come up back at night and they're going to shoot, you know, 200-400 more shots. And they're going to do that repetitiously every single day. So if you're only getting up 50-100 shots a day, you're cooked. You know, these guys are getting up 500 shots a day easily, and with game pace and the right technique. And you know, and on top of that, that's just, you know, a skill thing. The other part is the film study part, where, you know, guys like Chris Paul is one of the best basketball minds in the history of the game. And that's not just because he goes out there and plays and stuff. No, he dissects film 24/7. I even saw a clip that they talked about the other day where he's clipping up some of their film for the guys on the team and send it to them privately. And like, that's a coach's job. And so, you know, and he's still doing that. Like, I sat next to him my rookie year, every flight. And, you know, most guys want to put on their headphones and put on a movie or whatever it is. And Chris Paul puts on the game. And he's watching every single, not just his clips. Oh, man, that shot was sweet. Or that. Nah, he's dissecting the film and saying, like, all right, that guy's in help. This is how they're going to guard me. This is what they're going to do the next game. All right, let me get three to five games of the team that we're going to play next. All right, this is what, you know, this is how they play. This is how they're going to guard me. This is what's going to go on. And, you know, to see that from him every day, you know, hats off to him. That's why he's, you know, he's one of the best ever.
Yeah, and I think, like, every athlete has that turning point where they realize the mental game is as important as the physical one. I mean, yeah. Like, what was that shift for you?
Man, even now, I wish I did the mental game more than the physical game. My way of trying to prove was I'm going to work harder and crazier than the next person, not smarter. And I think if I would have took a better approach in my career to say, all right, let me take the smarter approach. Let's not have so much pounding on my body. Let's not be dead tired in the game because you shot up 1,000 shots that day. All right, let's take specific shots and then let's watch double the amount of film. You know, it is, as you get older, you start to realize it. There are a lot more mental games with it, and you need the IQ and you need to see things better. But you know, it's a good balance that you do need. You do need the work ethic, and you need to get there on the floor and do it. But that mental balance, and the guys that are able to master that part, that they're special. That's the LeBron Jameses and guys like that that are able to dissect the game and make the game very easy without having to pound their body so much.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then obviously, I mean, for you, I mean, 9 seasons in the NBA, I mean, that's rare air. I mean, Not everyone is in that category. I mean, what separates guys who make the league from those who stay in the league?
Man, like I said, just that dedication. I think a lot of times we come from backgrounds that we don't have much, and you're given a lot of things at once. And when you're given those things, you know, it can make or break you as a person, because you're evolving as a person as far as, you know, how you live. You know, might have come from no money. Oh, now you got a lot of money. So now you have a lot more resources to do a lot of things that you probably wouldn't do or never have been able to do because you didn't have the resources. And so how do I approach my day still? Do I still get in the gym and go to the gym at 4 or 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning? Damn, it's easier to sleep in when I have this money. All right, do I, you know, still take care of my body? Do I still lift extra? Do I still watch the film? Do I still have that inner hunger every single possession to make it? Which, you know, hats off to him, man, to see LeBron James still do it how he's doing it with what we know he has is commendable, man. Like, to have that every day to chase that greatness is really, really tough. And so that's a big thing, especially when you're getting to that level of seeing guys make it and not make it. Are you still who you are? Can you look your younger self in the face and say, I'm that same person that I've been? I'm not changing, no matter what has changed in my circumstances.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, in your career, I mean, you've been through, I mean, injuries, trades, highs, lows. I mean, like, what's the mindset that kind of kept you grounded through it all?
Man, the love of the game, man. I remember, I was crazy. I remember negotiating a contract and my agent telling me not to do it. And it was to sign my extension with the Grizzlies after the Western Conference Finals year. And, you know, they were lowballing me, and my agent didn't like the deal. And he felt that we could have got a significant deal the next summer. And I was just like, if I sign this, I get to be in the NBA for at least 8 years. It's like, because that gives me 4 years to be under on in an NBA jersey. That gives me a 4-year contract to live the life I'm living. F the money. I don't care about the money. And they're looking at me like, what? It was like, that's enough money. I'm good. Like, that's, I'm happy. Yeah. But for sure, I get to beat my dad. I get to beat my uncle. I get to get closer to some of the other guys in Fresno, you know, that I was chasing. And I get to be in the league at least 8 years. And so I was like, I'm signing that, you know? And so, you know, my passion, my love for the game, you know, through injuries, through trades, through, you know, there's a lot that comes with it. But, you know, to be able to live out your dream and play in the NBA is special. And so even to this day, I didn't have any other dreams. I didn't have dreams of coaching. I didn't have dreams of none of that. Like I had dreams of playing the NBA. So, you know, when you get to live it and go through it and experience it, you know, you cherish every moment of it. And I would die to live that dream again.
Yeah, no. And I mean, the NBA, I mean, it's full of talent. And I don't even think people fully comprehend how good those guys are. I feel like I got a little taste of it, not even the NBA, but step below it, playing Division One football and stepping into a basketball gym when we go play in the rec just in the summer, just hanging out. And the guy who's the eighth man off the bench at a Division One school can't even sniff 2 points a game. And he's given our best players on the basketball, on the football team buckets, like whenever he wants. And I'm like, bro, you guys don't realize how full of talent the NBA is. But obviously talent eventually fades. I mean, like in your opinion, I mean, what lasts longer than talent?
The NBA is different, man. I always, anytime someone asks me about the NBA, I always say it's like the X-Men. I was like, you know how they bring X-Men in the room or, you know, Avengers or whoever it is, you know, and everyone has like a superpower and you have your superpower and then you're just looking like, well, that dude could fly. Yeah. That dude's tall. That dude's Hulk-like strength. And you're just like, everybody has something that they're incredible at or just size-wise that or athleticism-wise that the average person isn't that person. So like, yes, talent does mean a lot. Size does mean a lot at that level. But then you also see like the guys that are separators, they're just their love and their dedication for it. You know, where like this is a true passion for them and they will watch every single game that comes on that day or they will live in the gym. They like Jamal Crawford is unbelievable at how much he loves the game, like loves it. He will watch every single game from women's basketball to elementary school to high school to whatever. Like if it's on TV or if he could access it, the dude still will go and watch kids in a park and sit in his car and watch them hoop and try to take different moves from it. And so you have to have an obsession and a passion and a love for it that's unmatched, and then combine that with physical tools. So like to see Wembanyama, he's so scary because we see his attributes of 7'5", can move like a, run like a gazelle, jump, do everything physically, but he's also craving knowledge from every resource possible, from Monks to KG to Jamal Crawford to everything. You're just like, no matter how much you love it, he has the physical tools that outmatch you. And then he has the mental tools that he's chasing something bigger than a check. He's chasing greatness.
Yeah, no, and that's huge. And I mean, obviously just all that kind of combined, your NBA career, seeing the dedication, kind of guys that have that childlike passion for the game that really never leaves and just that continuous curiosity and continuing to chase clarity in the game. I mean, now you're kind of back. I mean, where it all started for you. I mean, coaching at Washington. I mean, how different does the game look from the other side of the whistle now?
Man, I wish players can be coaches before they're players, because you get to see the game in a beautiful way, and you get to see personalities in a beautiful way, and you get to see, you know, maybe some things that you could have corrected the player and the player that you were. And You just get to see the game in a different light. And I wish I could have been a coach before I was a player, because it would have made me a better teammate, just a better man. It would have made me, look at the game in a different lens. I wouldn't have put so much pressure on myself. And the work would have been a lot more specific. And so to see the game through this lens as a coach is amazing. And I've been blessed to just be able to help others. And that's all I care about, man. Like, I had my career, I'm over and done with it. I'm have some coaching aspirations, but at the end of the day, man, I wanna change as many lives as I possibly can and help people be a lot better player than I was. And then hopefully be a lot better man than I am. And that's a big thing. You wanna develop young men, young women, and you wanna see them be able to lead the next generation and be able to provide for their families and do a lot of special things with this game of basketball.
And honestly, you're the first person I've heard say that players should be coaches before they're players. And dude, that makes so much sense. Because I know for me personally, in the football side of things, playing quarterback, my redshirt freshman year, I wasn't giving signals, but I was on the sideline. The first three games I didn't start, I was just a backup and I had the headset on. And I remember listening to the coaches and I'm watching the plays. I hear the plays. So I'm kind of thinking, oh, what would I do in this situation? So you're kind of breaking it down, watching the game, and something happens, he throws an incomplete pass, and you're kind of thinking like, oh, well, he just missed him, or maybe the coverage wasn't right. But then you hear the coaches going off in the headset, like just saying stuff. I'm like, huh, I would have never thought of it from that perspective, because then you start thinking like a coach, like, okay, they're watching it like they're playing Madden from the skybox, and they could kind of see everything, and it's a completely different perspective. So, I mean, I 100% on board with, if you could coach, I mean, a youth football team or youth 7-on-7 or a youth AAU, like, coach, you don't have to full-time dedicate a whole summer to it. But I mean, if you could just jump in there and try to teach and replicate your skills, I think that would help you jump maturity level-wise a lot quicker than usual.
In 2015, I got hurt, and I was 5 years in my career, and I was feeling good, and I'd become one of the best shooters in the NBA, and really carved out a niche where I became a full-time starter. And I'm thinking, all right, man, this next 10 years, I'm a rock and roll with this thing, and be able to make some money and have a great career and play 15 plus years. And then I had a surgery where, everything changed in an instant, where I was out for the next 2 seasons. And so in the midst of that, I started coaching an AAU team. And so I had the likes of, Jalen Green, Josh Christopher, Julian Strother, Jaden Hardy, and a plethora of others. And I had so much energy to work out every day, but I couldn't because I was hurt. And so I would do my workout, and they would keep me to an hour, 2 hours. And so I would work out early in the morning, and then I would go coach from 8, 9 in the morning, go pick the kids up in the van till 10 at night. And so, if I was like, all right, I'm putting up the money for this AAU team, I'm putting up the money for these kids, there's no better internship that you could get than coaching it yourself. If I'm gonna put up the money, I'm gonna get every live rep. And so that's what sparked me into it. And I was still in the midst of my NBA career, even though I only had a few years left. But I had become such a better player at that point in time, but I was hurt and I couldn't show it. But I was like, if I wasn't hurt and I was still coaching and I was still learning, and developed, the IQ and the things I had, how much better of a player would I have been, that whatever that time may have been left in my career. And so, I advise anybody, if whether you're still playing, hey, go to the coach's office. And that's another thing that helped me is, I was hurt, and Alvin Gentry came to me and was like, you're a great leader on this team. Come to a coaches meeting. I need you to see, like, you're gonna be a great coach one day. I was like, man, I ain't never coaching, man. I'm trying to play in the league and retire and live good. And so I went to that coaches meeting, and I got to be with Darren Erman and some of the great basketball minds, and I got to see, they start to open up my mind to, like, coaching. And so you start to see, like, all right, man, this guy's complaining today, or this is going on, and all the things that they have to deal with as a whole. They have to worry about 15 guys. I have to worry about myself as a player.
Yeah.
And so you start to change your perspective on things. And I think, you know, again, if you have, you know, you're still in your career, whether you're in college or whatever it is, NBA, NFL, spend some time trying to coach, like really dissect, you know, where your coach's brains are and, you know, or go to lower levels or wherever it is. And you know, take that time to learn because it's going to change you and it's going to help you for the better.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, I mean, you coaching at the University of Washington, I mean, when you're recruiting a player, I mean, what are you really looking for beyond the stats and the highlights?
Of course, you look for talent. You look for exceptional talent. I look for work ethic. I look for, you know, good people, guys that I can relate to. And a lot of times I tell kids I'm recruiting, like, I'm not really recruiting you. I'll be a soundboard for you to, and then if you want to come play for us, great. But, you know, some kids that I've recruited, I was like, I'll be an honest opinion. And because you don't get that much of that in this business anyways. People are trying to get something from you. Mm-hmm. So if you got a coach out there saying, like, man, I just want to see the best for you. Tell me what's on your mind. Tell me what you're thinking. I'm not going to be a used car salesman. I'm not the best salesman of it. I'm just going to be real with you. And if you feel that genuineness in me, then you're going to come. And so that's how I've been lucky to recruit the guys that I have, because they feel like at the end of the day, they come here. I have their best interest. Coach Sprinkle has their best interest. And we're going to do what's right for you on and off the floor. And the relationship doesn't stop there. You know, the relationship goes for, you know, however long we're alive. You know, I'm always going to be one call away and to be able to give you the best advice possible on and off the floor.
Yeah, no. And I mean, just in today's game, I mean, the landscape's kind of completely changed. I mean, the transfer portal's kind of changed everything. And in today's game, Quincy would be a unicorn, your college career. You think it's the transfer portal's like made players better prepared or more impatient?
More impatient, for sure. We're in a microwave time right now where, you know, I think Coach Prime, he got some slack for saying what he said about it, where, you know, you could get everything in an instant, whatever you want. And so, you know, patience is worn thin in a lot of people, but patience is where you develop and get better. You know, of course, there's some situations that aren't the best for you. And maybe in emergency situations, you need to make a change. But at the same time, that a lot of that change is within. And I think people need to see that. Like, you know, I haven't met a coach yet that wants to lose, that's trying to lose. Like, the coach is going to play the best players. He's going to play what he thinks is going to help him win. If you don't fit into that, figure out why, you know? And so maybe there's a guy that's exceptional ahead of you, and that happens. But what can you do to help yourself and help the program of where you are? And you'll feel better once you go through that fire. I think going through that fire of what I had to go through, it helped me, man. It made me the person I am today, and it helped me make each and every last year of my career. I felt it. You know, I felt like, oh, damn, I've been through this already. Yeah. I've been through this adversity already. I've seen what it's like to, like, all right, I have to take another step in my approach to the game. And, you know, when you make it through that fire, man, you're so much better off. Like Coach Monty Williams always says, like, everything you want is on the other side of hard. And so, you know, it's easy to grab that life vest and transfer or whatever it is. But, you know, going through it a lot of times, you know, it helps you and, you know, get your degree. And the things I did then in college, they're paying dividends now, where I never even imagined, you know, my college degree was going to help me coach here at the University of Washington. Like, if I didn't have that patience, who would have known?
Yeah, no, and I mean, just on the topic of patience, I mean, you got to Washington in 06. You kind of had to wait to 2010, where you're the 26th overall pick in the NBA draft, to kind of have your big, deep breath, like I kind of made it moment, and I could kind of take care of my pops, who's been looking out for me, and my mom, and kind of just being able to kind of help the people in your circle. And I think it's kind of an accelerated timeline now. I mean, coming out of high school, There used to be pressure. It's almost like a draftee situation coming out of high school now. You have those opportunities. I mean, what kind of opportunities have you seen present themselves just across collegiate basketball, across the country?
Man, again, they feel like a lot of these kids feel, you know, the need to do faster because they see the next person do it. You know, they need to, at the end of the day, they have to run their own race instead of worrying about, you know, all right, this guy is projected lottery pick, or this guy is projected this, or that guy got this on his NIL deal. Instead of just like, all right, those aren't you. Like, what can you do, and where do you want to end up and in your race? And I think that's a big issue in today, where, you know, kids are chasing offers or chasing these things because the next person has it. And it's like, you know, you need to do what's right for yourself and just block out the noise and have, you know, blinders on for your race.
Yeah, no, 100%. And yeah, I won't keep you too much longer, brother. I appreciate the time. I got probably 5 or 6 questions we'll kind of bust through at the end, but just kind of a couple short questions where you could give me your 30-second kind of elevator answer to them. But kind of the first one that I wanted to ask is, I mean, just like, finish this sentence. If you want to make it in this game, ...
You have to sacrifice everything. Everything to... That's it. You have to sacrifice.
Dude, yeah. And I think it's such an overlooked thing, too. It's like, I didn't realize it until I finished playing, and I only played in really high level college. I got sniffed to CFL a little bit in college, but it's like my first full year being done, I was like, man, I missed a lot of parties, or I missed a lot of weddings, or like, and it was just normal. Like, I didn't think anything. I never thought about it. It was just like, dude, I have practice. Like, I'm not going to go to that. You know, it's like, you do sacrifice a ton to be successful.
Man, I tell people all the time, it's like, man, I paid for so many weddings, funerals, engagements, and I paid for them, and I was not there. I wasn't in attendance. And it feels like you're in a time machine. My 9 years in the NBA is like, you know, life is going on and all this, but like, it feels like you're in a time warp. So when you get out of it, you're out of that little thing, and you're just like, oh wow, all this happened in that time, and you miss it. And it's tough, but that's what you're choosing to do. And that's the sacrifice that you have to make in order to, you know, get what you want. But there are times, man, like, I miss Thanksgivings or Christmases or whatever, and people had all these good moments, but I was living my moment in the dream I had, and that was the NBA.
Yeah, that's real. And I mean, like, what's a lesson the NBA taught you that every athlete should learn before college?
Discipline outweighs everything, and how you do anything is how you do everything. So, you know, whether that's on or off the floor, you know, your discipline is what's going to keep you there. And then how you do anything is how you do everything. Is like, are you holding yourself to a high standard every single day? Are you working your butt off to take care of your body? Are you doing the little things, even some things that are just cliche and small, like, Are you taking care of your locker room? Is that clean? Or is your house clean? Like, just the littlest things, it helped. And it's like, we call it winning in the margins here. Like, the little, tiniest little details. Like, I always felt like I wasn't good enough to get away with taking the shortcut. I wasn't good enough to, all right, maybe I ain't got it today, or maybe I ain't doing it. Like, I felt I had to do the littlest things in all aspects of life to even compete with Kobe Bryant, compete with Kevin Durant, because they're so exceptional. I had to make sure every bit of my life was in order to even have a chance to step on the floor with those guys.
Yeah, you know, my dad used to say something like that, and it used to annoy me when I was younger, but now that I'm older, I kind of understand. He used to say, hey, you could tell a lot about a person how clean or dirty their car is. And I was like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, you just want me to clean the car, you know, like that. You just want, but then now that I really think about it, it's like, man, like, if you keep your car clean, you keep your house in order, it's like, that means you got a clean mindset, your clarity, your focus, you have just an environment to focus and be able to think about things. And I think having mentors, whether directly or indirectly, is so impactful on the youth. And I mean, for you, like, what's a lesson Kobe taught you directly or indirectly that every young athlete should live by?
The work comes first. The work comes first. If you're not starting your day with your obsession, your passion, or if things are coming in between that, whether it's, I want to go hang out, I want to go on this trip instead of, you know, focusing on your craft, whatever it is, you know, at the end of the day, you got to prioritize, you know, your work, you got to prioritize your family, you got to prioritize your faith. And in order to be even touch an ounce of the greatness of Kobe Bryant, he prioritized his work every single day, prioritized his family every single day, prioritize his faith every single day. And you got to do all those things to be one of very, very few in the world.
Yeah, no. And I think all that stuff, I mean, all the coaches that I've had in my career have always been just super on top of being prepared and overly prepared. And I think once your preparation level is so high, that's when you start getting a little bit of swagger, a little bit of aura, a little bit of confidence about yourself, because you know you've done so much to prepare for that moment. There's nothing you could have possibly done. Now that you're a coach, I mean, what separates confidence from arrogance in the eyes of a coach?
The confidence comes from the work. That I think Kobe also says that. It's good to have some arrogance and have some belief in yourself, some swagger. But at the end of the day, whether it's the best coaches put in the most work, the best trainers put in the most work, yeah, the best players are putting in the most work. And so, you know, that's a separator. And then how, you know, your ego goes with that and how much swagger you have with that, that's on you. But that also comes from preparation, you know, being prepared. There's nothing like it, because at the end of the day, whatever's thrown at you, you know, you're able to kill it.
Yeah, for sure. And the last two questions I have for you, I mean, what's something you wish every parent of an athlete understood?
I wish every parent understood that their kid is their kid. Being a father myself, and I'm trying to tell myself I'm not going to be a crazy sports dad, but at the end of the day, you know, every time I look at my kids' eyes, I see my kids. I don't see them as, you know, a check. I don't see them as a, you know, an athlete or anything like that. And that won't change. And I think I'm going to try my best to keep that perspective, even though I'm probably going to be a crazy athlete parent. Yeah. But at the end of the day, man, like, you need to have that genuine passion and love for your kid and want the best for them. Even if the best for them is some tough love, you know, your kids, some people discipline their kids different ways now, whether that they act up, might need a spanking or, you know, whatever it is, or timeout. And so life does that too, to your kid. And are you going to give them a sucker, a lollipop, or are you going to give them some discipline to go along with it? So I think, you know, every parent out there, I think they just need to know, like, at the end of the day, love your kid as much as possible. They need that love at times, and they need tough love at times. And so at the end of the day, your kid is still your kid.
Yeah, no, that's real. And I think for you, I mean, just final question. I mean, when it's all said and done, I mean, obviously you've had a amazing NBA career already. You're starting your coaching career. You've a couple years into it now. I mean, how do you want the players you've coached to remember you?
5 years specifically, because I know that's I'm at 5 years. At 5 years right now. This is my fifth year of college coaching basketball.
Audience, that's a very specific number.
I'm at my fifth year of college coaching experience.
That's one hand. 5 years.
I'm making sure that people know this is my fifth year of college coaching experience. Just in case anybody wants to hear that. Yeah. But man, I want to be remembered as someone that loves their players and has a good relationship with them. That supersedes this basketball thing. Basketball is cool and all, but when they could look back at me and be like, "Man, that Q, that's family. Coach Pondexter, that's family." You know what I'm saying? Like that's what I want to take away. I want my players to take away from it. To where they could come to me for anything and everything in life, and we're able to have a bond forever. And so I want to be, you know, remembered as, you know, someone that challenged them on the floor, someone that helped them get better, someone that helped them achieve their goals. But at the end of the day, I just want to be looked at as someone that they could call family for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, Quincy Pondexter, I mean, a man who's walked through every level of the game. I mean, kind of came back to pouring to others from mimicking Kobe Bryant as a kid. I mean, just like sharing the court with him as a pro, from chasing greatness to teaching it. I mean, his story's proof that obsession and purpose can build something that, I mean, talent alone could never. And I think if you're a parent or athlete listening to this, I mean, this conversation's really, I mean, your blueprint to becoming more than just a player. And Quincy, I definitely appreciate our friendship, brother. I appreciate you taking some time.
Always, bro. You know I'm here if you need anything.
Yep, no doubt, brother. All right, till next time. Appreciate you guys tuning in to Athlete Country Club.
God bless.